Did anyone know whence she sprang, or even the name which Sir Wilton had displaced with his own? But Sir Wilton himself was not proud of his lady, and if the thing had been any business of theirs, it would have made no difference to him. He would nonetheless have let them pine in their ignorance. Did not his mother, a lady less dignified than eccentric, out of pure curiosity, beg enlightenment concerning her origin, and receive for answer from the high-minded baronet, "Madam, the woman is my wife," after which the prudent dowager asked no more questions, but treated her daughter-in-law with neither better nor worse than civility. Sir Wilton, in fact, soon came to owe his wife a grudge that he had married her, and none the less that at the time he felt himself of a generosity more than human in bestowing upon her his name. Creation itself, had he ever thought of it, would have seemed to him a small thing beside such a gift. That Robina Armour, after experience of his first advances, should have at last consented to marry Sir Wilton Lestrange, was in no sense in her favour, although after a fashion she was in love with him, in love, that is, with the gentleman of her own imagining whom she saw in the baronet, while the baronet, on his part, was what he called in love with what he called the woman. As he was overcome by her beauty, so was she by his rank. An idol at whose clay feet is cast many a spiritual birthright, and as mean a deity as of any man's device. But the blacksmith's daughter was in many respects, notwithstanding, a woman of good sense, with much real refinement, and a genuine regard for rectitude. Although Sir Wilton had never loved her with what was best in him, it was not in spite of what was best in him that he fell in love with her. Had his better nature been awake, it would have justified the bond, and been strengthened by it. Lady Lestrange's father was a good blacksmith, occasionally drunk in his youth, but persistently sober now in his middle age, a long-headed fellow, with reach and quality in the prudence which had long ceased to appear to him the highest of virtues. At one period, he had accounted it the prime duty of existence to take care of one's self, and so much of this belief had he communicated to his younger daughter, that she deported herself so that Sir Wilton married her, with the result that, when death knocked at her door, she welcomed him to her heart. The first cry of her child, it is true, made her recall the welcome, but she had to go with him notwithstanding, when the child was but an hour old. Not one of her husband's family was in the house when she died. Sir Wilton himself was in town, and had been for the last 6 months, preferring London and his club to Mortgrange and his wife. When a telegram informed him that she was in danger, he did go home, but when he arrived, she had been an hour gone, and he congratulated himself that he had taken the second train. There had been betwixt them no approach to union. When what Sir Wilton called love had evaporated, he returned to his mire, with a resentful feeling that the handsome woman, his superior in everything that belongs to humanity, had bewitched him to his undoing. The truth was, she had ceased to charm him. The fault was not in her. It lay in the dulled eye of the swiftly deteriorating man, which grew less and less capable of seeing things as they were, and transmitted falser and falser impressions of them. The light that was in him was darkness. The woman that might have made a man of him, had there been the stuff, passed from him an unprized gift, a thing to which he made Hades welcome. It was decent, however, not to parade his relief. He retired to the library, lit a cigar, and sat down to wish the unpleasant fuss of the funeral over, and the house rid of a disagreeable presence. Had the woman died of a disease to which he might himself one day have to succumb, her death might, as he sat there, have chanced to raise for an instant the watery ghost of an emotion. But coming as it did, he had no sympathetic interest in her death any more than in herself. Lolling in the easiest of chairs, he revolved the turns of last night's play, until it occurred to him that he might soon, by a second marriage, take amends of his neighbours for their disapprobation of his first. So pleasant was the thought, that brooding upon it, he fell asleep. He woke, looked, rubbed his eyes, stared,